Even if you don't know much about paleoanthropology, the study of our human and pre-human ancestors of the distant past, you've probably heard about the fossil Lucy. At over 3 million years old at the time of her discovery, Lucy was the oldest hominid fossil ever found. I think there's some older ones out there now, but she's still probably the most famous.
Donald Johansson joins us now. He's the paleoanthropologist who discovered Lucy back in November of 1974. His discovery permanently changed scientists' ideas about who we are and where we come from. Donald joins us in studio now. He's speaking tonight at the Overture Center in Madison at 7:30. Donald, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here to be able to celebrate Lucy's 40th birthday.
Well, it's been about 40 years, but can you take us back to that day when you first discovered Lucy? I understand it sort of started on a hunch of yours.
Well, I actually was looking in northeastern Ethiopia in a place called the Afar Triangle. I knew there were fossils there. There were elephant fossils, monkey fossils, gazelles, and so on, and I was hoping to find fossils of our ancestor. I was in camp on a Sunday morning. My graduate student said, we've got to go out to the site and record on a map the exact spot where a beautiful pig skull had been found. I didn't want to go out. I did. And as we were walking back to my Land Rover, I glanced over my right shoulder and spotted a small piece of arm bone, your elbow bone, actually. And that led to 40% of a 3.2 million-year-old human ancestor who came to be nicknamed Lucy.
At this time, this is 40 years ago, did you know right away what a big deal this was going to be for the search for human origins?
Well, I knew that she was older than 3 million years because the geologists were able to date a volcanic horizon. I knew she was fairly complete. I knew she was a she because she was so small. If you took the length of her thigh bone, she was only about 3.5 feet tall. Someone asked on the expedition, well, maybe it was a child. And we looked at her teeth, and she had adult teeth. So I knew that this was important because at that time in the study of human origins, or that tongue twister, paleoanthropology, all the fossils older than 3 million years would fit into the palm of your hand. So this was, I knew, an incredibly important fossil. I didn't know how important. I didn't know that she would be a new species. And I didn't know, most importantly, that she would rewrite the shape of the human family tree.
And you call her Lucy. Where did that name come from?
Well, we had a member of the expedition. We were celebrating that evening, and we were all listening to a Beatles tape. And Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds was playing. And Pamela said, well, if you think it's a female, we should call her Lucy. And I thought, well, I'm a University of Chicago PhD. I don't give cute little names to my fossils. But by the next morning at breakfast, oh, are we going back to the Lucy site? How old do you think Lucy was when we found her? You think Lucy, there'll be more of Lucy, et cetera, et cetera. So she got that nickname, and it has stuck ever since.
You mentioned the family tree and a changing picture. What's the argument been over how we place Lucy in the human and, I guess, pre-human family?
Well, what a great question, because Lucy was placed at the bottom of a Y that led to several lineages, lines of humans that died out. They were given another tongue twister name, Australopithecus. And I've also postulated since 1979 that she was an ancestor to the human genus, Homo, which is Latin for man, which is us. We're Homo sapiens, supposedly wise man, but I listen to the same news you do. And so she was the last common ancestor to those lineages that led to us and a whole series that died away. And that is was quite different because there was another candidate at that time that we now know is on a side branch and ultimately met the grim reaper of evolution, extinction.
And there was some controversy at the time. Even though you had made this discovery, it sounds as though, you know, none other than a leaky said, no, I don't think you really found what you thought you found. And it took some while for science to sift and winnow and get to what her place truly was.
Well, this is the process of science, I think. And statements like this are made, discoveries are made, whether it has to do with global warming or it has to do with who our ancestor was. And it does take time for this new evidence to filter through the scientific community to be evaluated. But today, there's very little controversy that Lucy was a new species, Australopithecus afarensis, that she does occupy this place on the family tree, and she did live 3.2 million years ago.
So one question in our early ancestors related to brains versus walking. Did our bigger brain come first or walking upright come first? Did Lucy help tip the scales on that one way or the other?
She certainly did, because when we examined her pelvis and her knee and her ankle, all the signs of upright walking. People, we do this every day. We don't think about it as something unique. But we're the only mammal on the planet that walks around on two legs. All other animals are much more reasonable and walk around on four legs. They don't fall down and trip and fall on their faces and so on. But it is a unique mode of locomotion. And it is something that distinguishes us, as I said, from all other primates, apes and monkeys and all other mammals. And looking at her, what's called postcranial skeleton, her pelvis and hip and so on, she was walking upright. But when you look at her brain, we didn't have much of her skull. We had just the back portion that allowed us to fit a good-sized orange into it. Hmm. So she had a brain that was about the size of the cup of coffee you have in the morning. Our brains are four times that size. So she was really the ape that stood up. She had a very small ape-like brain, but she did walk in a manner almost identical to ourselves today.
Now, at the time, as I understand it, she was the oldest hominid fossil that had been found, and certainly one of the most complete, as you said, and that's not the case anymore. Can you catch us up on what we know today about where humans came from and where Lucy fit into that picture?
Oh, my goodness. We had a couple of hours. It'd be easy. There are other fossils that go back to as much as 6 million years when individuals were walking upright, so this seems to be a cardinal feature for what it means to be placed on the human family tree. There are other fossils at 4.4 million. We're not sure exactly where they fit in the family tree because they have a large mixture of ape and human-like features, but we're probably spending much more time in the trees than Lucy. And then there's a wonderful baby at 3.3 million years found by an Ethiopian colleague of mine, and that's one of the wonderful things now in Ethiopia. We've trained a whole series of scientists who are taking over the research in that country. And this baby at 3.3 million years old has a complete skull and face and most of the backbone and ribs, parts of the shoulder blades, and is really quite wonderful.
A thing that amazes me in hearing this story is, A, parts of these pre-people survived 3-4 million years, A, and B, you found them. How is there a sense of how to find a likely environment? How do you know where to even start looking?
Sure. I mean, this is one of the things people say. What was the most astonishing thing about finding Lucy? I jokingly say we didn't even know she was missing. But the point is that, yeah, they have to die in the right place. She lived and died by a lake, fell into the lake, or was dragged in by a crocodile. We don't know. And her bones began to mineralize and turn into stone. And there were additional sands and clays and silts that covered her and preserved her there for 3.2 million years of anonymity. And then 3.2 million years later, a scientist like myself who was specifically looking for human ancestor remains came along and looked over his shoulder and realized what that bone was. But if I'd looked to my left, I would have missed her. And it was fortunate that I looked to my right.
And you mentioned Ethiopia and what an important site it's become for paleoanthropologists, you know, like yourself who are studying human origins. Why that site? What makes that such a fertile spot?
What makes it a fertile spot is the Great Rift Valley, a structure that runs all the way from Mozambique in the south right on up to where Africa intersects the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden. And this was brought about by earth movements creating rivers and lakes. Animals fell into them. The movement is still going on today and resurrecting those ancient sediments and through the process of erosion, eroding these fragments back out onto the surface of the ground.
As you watch what's going on and participate in science going on today, what are you most excited about in circa 2015 paleoanthropology?
Well, in 2015, I'm very excited about something I can't talk about because I'm embargoed. But tomorrow, everybody will hear on National Public Radio and read in their newspapers about a rather stunning discovery that is being announced by the Institute of Human Origins, where I work in Arizona, and will add, I think, some clarity to the family tree. But in 2015, 2016, we are continuing to find fossils in Ethiopia. We have expeditions in the field as we speak. And important nuggets of our ancestry are being collected, evaluated, and fitted into what is the story of how we became human.
Wow. Well, can we have you back on tomorrow? Maybe not. Well, what do you think is left in terms of these big pictures for the next generation? I mean, are we at the point, you know, sometimes they say in certain fields, physics is complete, paleoanthropology. Where is paleoanthropology today?
Well, there's an enormous amount of work to do. There are lots of fossil fields in the Rift Valley stretching up to the country of Eritrea, for example, probably places in other parts of Africa where, like Sudan, for example, which has not been surveyed greatly. There are new fossil discoveries being made on a regular basis in South Africa. So on the discovery side, there are still many things to discover. In the lab, you know how, as students, we didn't like to do our homework? Well, you can become a professor, and you don't like to do your homework either. You'd rather go out and find the fossils. So we have a storehouse full of specimens, skulls, jaws, teeth, bones, and so on, that really need to be evaluated and reevaluated in some instances using new technology. There's an article coming out shortly about a reconstruction of a mandible or a lower jaw that's been known since 1960, yet it's taken this long for someone to kind of piece it all back together. And so there's lots and lots to do.
You've been at this for a long time, at least 40 years. What drives you? What excites you about the questions of human origins?
Well, I think it's a central question, the essential question we all ask our mothers or fathers, where did I come from? We're given an answer sometimes about a stork or whatever, all sorts of different ideas of creation stories. But the scientific story is one that's still unraveling. And to understand our origins, for me, is particularly important because it helps us understand our place in nature. And if there's anything we can say, it was Mother Nature who really crafted who we are today. And with that perspective, I think, I hope that we will develop a kinder attitude to the natural world around us.
And Donald, as we wrap up, you're known as a great communicator, an ambassador for the field of paleoanthropology and human origins. Why is it so important to you to communicate, not just to other scientists in your field, but to everybody, to your human family here, about what you're doing and why it matters?
Well, first of all, my excitement. I am so excited about my field, I sort of want to tell everybody. And I think everybody deserves to be able to understand science, be able to translate that science so that everyone can understand where their tax dollars are going, how science works, how it applies so much to the world we live in today, and whether it's a story of climate change or human origins or technological breakthroughs, we need to help people understand that science is the future. It is something that helps us evaluate our place in this universe.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Donald Johansen, a paleoanthropologist best known for his discovery of the 3.2-million-year-old fossil dubbed Lucy. He's also the author of several books, including Lucy's Legacy.
He speaks in Madison at the Overture Center tonight at 7:30.